Kildare Focus with Owen Beatty. Text or WhatsApp on 0833 97 97 97.
Now, 241 medicines are currently out of stock in Ireland. The latest medicine shortage index, which is put together by Azure Pharmaceuticals, also shows 13 treatments on the WHO's critical medicines are currently unavailable here in this country. Well, what's going on? Sheena Mitchell is a pharmacist and she's with us on the line now. Sheena, good to talk to you and good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Owen. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. I went into a pharmacist yesterday to try and get eye drops because I have dreadful hay fever, although it hasn't been too bad this year so far. Couldn't get eye drops, and I know that 11 other products to treat hay fever are currently unavailable. What exactly is happening here, Sheena?
So it varies from product to product, really. There's a few kind of outliers, which are just short for, I suppose, unique reasons, like the likes of the weight loss drug Ozempic, due to just huge increased global demand. But actually, the rest of the medicines, and they range from everything from, as you said there, hay fever medications to, on prescription, like an awful lot of blood pressure medications and antibiotics, and even things for arthritis and skin or breast cancer are also unavailable. So there's a big wide scope of products, and the commonality between most of them is that these are medicines that are cheaper and are off-patent. So it means that where we used to get a product off one manufacturer previously, there would also be four or five other companies making the same drug and producing it. So that if there was any bump in the supply chain, we'd be able to go to our supplier two or three or four. But unfortunately, back in 2013, the government brought in pricing and supply of medicines good agreement under the Health Act. And what this did, you know, was honourable at the time. It's trying to reduce our drugs bill and make sure that we weren't being ripped off in essence. But we now know that manufacturers are experiencing an awful lot of increased costs for the same reason as everyone else: energy costs, packaging costs, shipping costs. Everything from in the production area has kind of increased, and yet we're still dropping our prices. And the problem with that is the manufacturers have choice on where to send their stock. So like Germany are paying four times what we're paying for certain medicines. So you can't really blame them. You know, when, like, for example, out of the medicines that we've been notified are going to have further price drops in June and July. So every month the pharmacy gets a letter telling them what's being reimbursed and what prices are changing. And it's under the legislation. And basically they're telling us that two of the four drugs that are being reduced again are already in short supply. Mm. Yet the government are only offering to pay less. You know, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's very frustrating, I'm sure, from a pharmacist's point of view, Sheena, when, you know, you're met with that kind of response from manufacturers, etc. But I'm sure you're hearing it as well at the counter from people coming in, trying to get certain medicine, trying to get certain prescriptions filled, and being told that we don't have that here. So it's kind of annoying everybody.
It is, and it's really, really difficult because obviously there are certain circumstances where we can do things like give you a half dose of a stronger tablet or give you two of a lower strength tablet to try and make sure that the patient isn't impacted. But as these shortages grow, and I know the HPRA figure, I think, is at 261 now, but actually, in reality, it's much worse at a pharmacy level. So that figure comes from the manufacturers reporting the shortages to the HPRA. But if they don't report them, it's like it's not happening. And the reality is, on the ground in pharmacy, we have over 330 medicines which are in short supply from our wholesalers that we can't access. So it's obviously a very difficult situation. And when there are issues in the reporting of it like that, it means that the government, you know, are blindfolded. They don't see that there's a problem, so they're not addressing it. So it is difficult. It's very difficult on the patients.
Okay, I just have a message in here as well from a listener who had a similar experience to myself going into a chemist trying to get hay fever tablets, and they were asking the question from a pharmacist's point of view, can you not maybe forward plan, or how far in advance can you plan? Because hay fever is obviously seasonal. So you might take us through maybe using hay fever as an example for medication. If you were to order in a batch of medication there, could you not maybe have bulk bought, so to speak?
100%. And when we have any smell of anything happening, that's what we try to do to a certain extent. If we do that too much, we actually cause supply issues. So you have to remember that generic medicines are, when the manufacturers make them, the margin on them is so low that they only make, they're only producing their monthly, I suppose, order volume per month. So if we wipe them out, that means then that the supply chain is going to break. So it would be reckless for us to completely stockpile. But of course, there are times where, you know, illnesses like hay fever are more dominant and our monthly orders would reflect that. But we can't cause havoc to the supply chain either, or it becomes more of a problem for patients. And I think, you know, one of the big issues is that a lot of manufacturers are choosing now not to supply Ireland at all, or they're stopping making certain generic lines that they're not making any money off because they're not bothered, which is understandable. They're not a charity either. So it is difficult. But I would say to people who are suffering with hay fever at the moment, because I know it's particularly difficult, but Optichrom allergy eye drops are back in stock at the moment. And there is also, for contact lens wearers out there, people who are finding it really difficult to use drops and shouldn't use them with contact lenses, Optase do allergy eye drops in little single unit doses. So that's just two products that are currently available in pharmacies. So there are some options out there for people, and just ask your pharmacist and they'll be able to advise you.
Okay, and before we let you go then, Sheena, what ultimately is the solution here, and is it going to get worse before it gets better?
Yeah, I think collaboration is the solution, and I think it is on all accounts going to get worse before it gets better. I think that Medicines for Ireland, which is an organisation that kind of looks at this kind of thing, have flagged this to the government, but I think the HPRA have dismissed it. So really it's about everyone taking this seriously and realising that medicines are our biggest, strongest intervention in healthcare. We cannot do without basic medicines. Like, this goes from everything from epilepsy medicines to IVF treatments. Like, we cannot abandon our patients, and it's time for the government to start engaging with all of the relative stakeholders in a meaningful way to try and readdress and maybe look at that policy for pricing and procurement.
That's Sheena Mitchell, pharmacist, on that issue. 241 medicines currently out of stock here in Ireland. Thanks as always for your time, Sheena, and good afternoon to you. And let us know if you have been impacted by that. Have you gone into your pharmacist or your chemist recently to be told that a medication that you would usually get over the counter is no longer available due to those supply issues? 0833 97 97 97. Want to bring you up to date on some local news then from all four corners of the county to let you know that water treatment plant upgrade works may be causing supply disruptions to Enfield, Possex Town and Johnstown Bridge and the surrounding areas tonight. Works are scheduled to take place from 10 p.m. until 4 a.m. tomorrow morning, and it's recommended that you allow 2 to 3 hours after the estimated restoration time for your supply to fully return. If you were tuned in to Kildare Today a little bit earlier, Fine Gael councillor Tracy O'Dwyer has confirmed that a new extended bus route from Dunlavin to Newbridge will provide a regular service through Kilcullen on a 7-day basis. It was confirmed that the 129 service will have upgraded frequency compared to the current temporary service. And here's what Councillor Tracy O'Dwyer had to say when speaking to me a little bit earlier on.
The NCA confirmed yesterday that a new enhanced service will actually run from Dunlavin to Newbridge going through Kilcullen. So it's proposed that this service will be a 7-day service with regular times throughout the day. So a far more enhanced service than what we currently have. I did ask for a timeline as to when this service will commence, and the NCA said they will come back with that because obviously they have to tender for the project. But they are hoping that it will be late August, early September. So it was a really positive meeting yesterday.
Okay, a couple of other bits and pieces then to bring you up to date on. And if you're out in the Allan Wood, Coolera area, I know there is a power outage there. An estimated 152 ESB customers in that area currently without power. ESB says it's carrying out essential improvement and maintenance works in the area and will restore power as quickly as possible. Works began at 20 past 10 this morning. Power expected to be restored by 5 o'clock this evening. Monreed's playground is closed today, tomorrow and on Thursday. That's to facilitate the installation of a basket, swing, slide and sand area. Queries can be directed to parks@kildarecoco.ie. That's in the Monreed area of Naas. And finally for now, surface dressing works are being carried out on the L5054 Ballygoran Maynooth today. Traffic management measures are in place for the duration of the works and diversion routes clearly signposted.
Kildare Focus with Owen Beattie. Text or WhatsApp on 0833 97 97 97.
Yeah, just got a message in saying Aeroge senior hurling team are playing Clane this evening. Any idea what time, asks JD. And just from looking on the website here, Kildare GAA, it is at 7:30 in Donore, that game between Aeroge Curraquil and Clane. Also, just while we're at it, we might as well mention that Selbridge are playing Arclock in Selbridge at the same time. Coildove against Naas, Leixlip against Kilcock, and Naas' second team up against Moorfield. So first name team at home and all games there at 7:30. But that Aeroge match, as I mentioned, is in Donore. Let's go on to other issues then. And as I mentioned to you before the break, this week is Spay Aware Week. It's been an annual event for over 15 years and has played an important part in persuading people that spaying and neutering should be seen as a normal part of responsible pet ownership. Well, I'm joined on the line now by Gillian Bird, Head of Education and Media at the Dublin Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, or the DSPCA, as they're more commonly known. Gillian, good to talk to you again.
And you, yeah, good.
Is it a case of we have to persuade people to get kittens and dogs neutered?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we still do. We have to remind people that not just is it the female animals, but also the male animals that need to be neutered. And of course, not just talking about dogs and cats, we're also talking about things like rabbits and ferrets as well.
Okay, so the whole process then, ultimately, it's about maintaining and managing the population, is it?
Yeah, so there's a number of different things. Obviously, the population control is the first thing, but it also can help with certain cancers that dogs and cats can get if they're not neutered. You've also got the health risks, and one of the risks that people don't think about is the fact that the males and females, when they're not neutered, are often out looking for love. And it is very unlikely that if you have an unneutered male and he's allowed out to wander, he's going to be looking for girlfriends, and chances are he's going to end up crossing a road, not paying attention, getting hit by a car. So a lot of the dogs that we get in here into the DSPCA that have been hit by cars, and sometimes it's fatal, unfortunately, are quite often unneutered male dogs.
Okay, and the bad news as well is that canine overpopulation has come back, and many people who took on dogs during the pandemic have found that they can't cope with the animals after all. And we've seen yourselves and Dogs Trust and other organisations talking about the number of pets that have been surrendered or abandoned.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, then the other risk is that so many people who got dogs during COVID, who would have got them, what they thought they were getting them from good sources, they may well have come from mass-produced breeding places. And what's happening is, in some cases, people are thinking, sure, I let my Cavapoo have babies with your Cavapoo. And people don't stop and think, I wonder, are these two dogs related? So you can end up with health issues as well going down the line in that sense.
Okay, take us through the process then of neutering or spaying. And there may be people, you know, tuned in who have done this regularly with their pets, or people who have never gotten it done. So let's speak to those who have never gone down that route yet.
Well, obviously for the males, it is a simpler procedure than it is for the females. So the females, they will end up having a full hysterectomy, basically. So they remove the womb and the ovaries, which prevents all sorts of infections and cancers happening and can stop the animal coming into season and having babies. With the males, it is the testicles that are removed. It really doesn't affect the appearance too much. I mean, they obviously won't have something there, but it's only the testicles that are removed. So it's a procedure that's simpler for the male dogs than it is for the female, because it's a full like under the operation for the females, whereas the males it would take less time. But it is really important, and it sounds grim, and I know there's people out there crossing their legs as I speak going, oh, I'm not doing that to my dog, but really at the end of the day it is something that's really important as part of responsible pet ownership to do this. So even though DSPCA now, we do our own spaying and neutering programs here, and we neuter everything that leaves the shelter here, it is really important that people talk to their local welfare groups about subsidised neutering, about getting it done, talk to your vet about it. It is really, really important to get it actually done with your pets.
Okay, and Pauline in Castledermot has actually just texted in to say, we're thinking about getting a new dog. Is there a certain age bracket that they should be neutered or spayed within?
Yes, so they've started neutering the animal, the dogs in particular, later than they would have. So usually the dogs would be neutered around 12 to 14 months. They used to do them at 6 months. Cats, they prefer to do them when they're at least, well, between 5 and 6 months of age, because they will start breeding very young. But the dogs, they've actually discovered that there are scientific reasons to leave it later. And depending on the breed, your vet will advise you when the best time to get it done is. Cats, like we, for example, in the DSPC, we actually neuter the kittens when they're 9 weeks old before they go to their homes. And we are seeing that have a knock-on effect in the overpopulation of cats, especially in the Dublin area.
Okay, and just finally then, what about the recovery period for dogs or cats? Because, you know, you may be looking, and people may be looking at their little kitten or their little puppy now and thinking, I don't want to put you through that. But I know that with our dog, she's a female dog, we got her neutered fairly early on and she made a complete and full recovery. They do, don't they?
It is. It's usually you drop your pet off in the morning, you collect them in the afternoon. They'll be a bit groggy, they'll be a bit sore, they may have to wear the cone of shame to stop them pulling at any stitches. But usually full recovery is within a week. But with us humans, you know, apart from the recovery time, but sometimes it's psychological as much as anything else. So it is a much quicker recovery time with our pets. But we obviously have to be careful. They can't go in for mad runs a day after they've had their operation. But really, it is normally within a week that they should be back to their normal selves. And you do have to then watch about not feeding them too much and getting advice from your vets about suitable diet and all the rest of it after that. But it really is a much simpler procedure than people do, and people are often put off by the cost of it, and that's why things like Spay Week are really important, because it does offer subsidised veterinary neutering treatment.
It does, absolutely. And you can get more information online on the DSPCA's website if you talk to your local vet or any of those organisations that deal with animals as well. They'll point you in the right direction. That's Gillian Bird, Head of Education and Media at the Dublin Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. The DSPCA and Spay Aware Week runs until the 4th of June, which is this coming Sunday. So you have until Sunday to get in touch with your local vet, or whatever the case may be, to get more information on it. Thanks, Gillian. Let's go to Clain, where I'm joined on the line by Seamus O'Connor, committee member of Clain Autism Friendly Town. Good afternoon, Seamus, and good to talk to you.
Hi, Owen. How are you?
I'm good. Tomorrow evening, there's an Autism Champion event taking place in the Westgrove Hotel in Clain at 7:30. And we spoke to you on the Kildare Today show last week about this. But just to remind people, and maybe for those who didn't hear that interview, what exactly is going to be happening tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow night we are relaunching our Clain Autism Friendly Town project, which is something we started back, I think, in 2019, that has obviously been disrupted with various different events from 2020 onwards. And we're just trying to get the wheels moving on this again. And tomorrow night, what we're doing is we're going to introduce some things that have been done in the village in relation to this and some of the work that has gone on, to try and familiarise people in the community about what the steps that we need to take to become an autism-friendly town. And we're also going to be joined by Adam Harris, CEO of As I Am, who oversees this project, and he's going to be talking about the the kind of nationwide project give it the kind of nationwide context of it. There's around, I think there's 20 towns altogether that are a part of this project, and to kind of give a sense of that interconnectivity between all of us and what we can do to become autism friendly.
The term autism friendly town, what does that mean, and ultimately what's your aim to bring to Clain?
Ultimately, I suppose what we want to do is we want to make Clain just a bit more inclusive for people on the autism spectrum. I mean, the project itself is, there's some very kind of straightforward things that we'd be looking for from autism champions. Now, an autism champion is it's someone who would be a business owner, an educator in the village. And what they would do, what we would ask them to do is to take four steps to becoming autism friendly. Of these four steps, we've done it once, and it's a project that's seen over 3 years. But those four steps would be to be assistance dog friendly, which is it's actually a given because it's a legal requirement. But it's just to kind of recognise that. The second one is to kind of undergo autism awareness and acceptance training, which is it's an online thing that we will kind of manage through the Autism Friendly Town Committee, and it only takes about 20 minutes. The other things are to be to make one sort of environmental autism related environmental change, which is something can be as simple. People are kind of very familiar with kind of autism friendly or sensory friendly shopping hours, where the lights might be dimmed, and music might be played low. Just to kind of make it a softer sensory environment.
And on that note, actually, I was in the Super Value shop there in Clain the other day, which is just beside the Westgrove Hotel, and they had a sign as you walked in to say that, the lights were dimmed, there was music playing, and they were saying it's kind of the autism-friendly hour. So that's one example, and that's happening in Clain.
That's happening. And lots of places do this, and lots of places do things anyway that would be related to this project, but it's just essentially you can be part of this project. You can be recognised for the things you do already, and it's not going to cost you a penny. It's a really good project. I've had experiences in businesses in Clain where they've been very accepting and very accommodating in tricky situations, and it's just to say, look, lads, would you like to be involved in this? Very simple steps to take, and as a community, we could be recognised as autism friendly. We could be part of a nationwide group, and I think it's great for the town. It says something very good about ourselves and the community, and it's just recognition for a lot of things that are going on anyway.
So if anybody in the village of Clain or any businesses want to pop along, it's open to everyone essentially tomorrow night in the Westgrove Hotel, 7:30, as I am CEO Adam Harris is the guest speaker. Can you just show up on the night, or do you need to RSVP?
Well, there is, we have a flyer that is on our Facebook page. There's flyers around the village with a QR code on that, and if you could scan that and RSVP, that would be great because it gives us an idea of numbers. If those things aren't working for you, just email us at autismfriendlytown.clain@gmail.com. I'll just say that again, which is autismfriendlytown.clain@gmail.com. If the RSVP isn't working for you, if either of those things don't work, we'd love to see you anyway. We'd just like to be able to kind of keep an idea of what numbers what people might show up. There's one thing now that I did really, it was remiss of me, I didn't mention it in the last time I was speaking to Joan, that what I didn't say is, if there's people living in Clain who are autistic, we would love to hear from you. If you'd like to be there on the night, that would be great. We will have a sensory area there as well, if need be. Even if you can't make it on the night, we would love to hear from you through email, through Facebook, wherever, because, I mean, it's ultimately, we really need to hear what people's, the opinion of people on the spectrum and what we can do to be more accepting and in the community. And I think that would be, like, the project would benefit greatly from the input of those people.
Good stuff. Well, listen, best of luck with that event tomorrow night. You can get more information on the Clane Autism Friendly Town Facebook page, or that email address is autismfriendlytown.clane@gmail.com tomorrow night, 7:30 at the Westgrove Hotel. And that is Seamus O'Connor, committee member of Clane Autism Friendly Town.
Kildare Focus with Owen Beattie.
Now, MS Ireland are holding events in Dublin, including a briefing in the Irish Parliament, a lecture at Trinity College Dublin, and earlier the annual coffee morning at MS Ireland National Care Centre. Many famous buildings throughout the country will be lit up in red to raise awareness for MS, and the branches and regional offices are holding many events, including fundraisers, tea parties, poetry readings, vintage car shows and information days, to name just a few. Well, I'm joined on the line by Leslie Kennedy, Kildare Regional Community Worker with MS Ireland, and Rita Larkin, who is from Leixlip and living with MS. Good afternoon to you both, and thanks for joining us. Rita, we'll come to you in a moment, Rita, but just to start off with you, Leslie, to tell us a little bit about MS itself and the work that you do with MS Ireland.
Well, Owen, MS is a disease of the brain and the spinal cord. It's basically is damaging to the central nervous system. Its severity and duration of MS symptoms vary considerably from person to person, and no person is the same. It's really unpredictable condition, and can sometimes it can be a very hard condition to manage. So symptoms can go from reduced mobility, fatigue, loss of sensation, memory difficulties, concentration. So it's a real, it's experienced by everyone completely individually. It's no person is the same, and that's something that it can be quite difficult to people to identify with.
And I remember actually one of the most vivid memories that I have from primary school was taking part in the MS Readathon, and I'm sure a lot of parents out there and children who went to schools in primary schools around the county will remember doing the MS Readathon, and that's something that's kind of, you know, brings the condition to the forefront of people's minds, and now you're trying to raise awareness about it in different ways.
Yeah, I think we're trying to make it, I suppose, more universal to everyone, and get, like, even just kind of opening out to different cohorts and just reaching different communities, just trying to get from younger people to the older generation, just to know that MS affects everyone, you know, and it may not be just yourself who's been diagnosed with MS, but it can impact on your children and just your larger family in general. And it's just about people making the connections and reaching out to their communities and just getting the supports they need.
What kind of work do you do then as the regional community worker here in Kildare for MS Ireland?
Now, I would work generally one-to-one with people and their families, and we would work, you know, through any issues or concerns they may be having. A lot of people kind of, you know, when they're diagnosed, it can be quite a scary time in their life, and it's kind of just being a support system there for them and giving them that support around emotional feelings, welfare, any services that could be available to them, because a lot of people wouldn't know what's available to them out there. And it's just, I suppose, a lot of educational support as well, you know, letting them know that, you know, you're there, they can call you whenever they need. And then we do a lot of outreach kind of work, where we'll do coffee mornings. We did like a little festival day, it was called Miesta, in the care centre. Then there is the care centre that's available to people as well. So there's a lot of, you know, information and resources out there, and it's kind of getting people to reach out to us, you know.
Great stuff. We'll come back to you in a moment, Leslie, just to tell you how to, you know, if people want to get more information or donate or whatever the case may be.
Yeah,
so just
brilliant.
Stay with us on the line. Rita Larkin, though, as I say, is also with us, a Leixlip resident living with MS. Rita, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Tell me a little bit about your story then, Rita, your diagnosis, and maybe how MS affects you day to day.
Well, I'm actually one of the lucky ones, thank God. I can look after myself. I can get myself out and about. I'm involved with a lot of things. I'm involved with the Kildare branch, so I'm kept busy with that. But a lot of people are not as fortunate as me. They can't, like, they find it hard to get dressed in the morning. You know, they need constant support and care. So I really count myself lucky. And I was diagnosed 28 years ago. So I've been stable now for about 10 years.
28 years, that's quite a long time to be living
and
with
it. I actually had it longer than that. I had it since I was young, but it only came, you know, it takes something to trigger it off. So I literally only got diagnosed at 38 years of age, but I had it since I was a teenager.
Okay, take us back, actually, take us back to when you got that diagnosis. What was it that was kind of ringing alarm bells for you when you were thinking something's not right?
Blurred vision.
Blurred vision.
Once that went, within a week, I was diagnosed. I never seen anything happen so fast. I was rushed to the Mater Private MRIs. It was the first MRI in Ireland, and I got done the Mater Private, and I got me diagnosed within a week that I had MS.
Wow, that's something that's, like, I mean, not to be flippant, but it's quite mundane, you know, it's something that you would easily just say, you know, maybe your eyesight is going, or maybe you're feeling a little bit dizzy or a little bit faint, but fair play to you for going and getting checked out, and then you're able to get a prompt diagnosis.
I had been attending the Mater Hospital for a few years, actually 3 years it took them to diagnose me, and they were doing every test under the sun, everything bar the MRI. And they kept putting it, you know, down to this, that and the other. But see, they won't tell you until they're 100% sure that, you know, they won't tell you they think it's this, that or the other, because the symptoms can be anything, relate to any other conditions. So until they were 100% sure, which blur vision is one of the main symptoms, when that happens, they kind of know then.
Okay, and if we bring it then to how you're doing now, you know, you say you can do quite a lot yourself. Is there anything, any other way that's impacting you?
Fatigue. My main problem is fatigue and weakness of the legs. If I do too much, but you see, I know how when to stop. I know when to rest. I look after myself. I'm used to looking after myself, so I know when I need to rest and, you know, I've done enough. But I keep myself busy. I'm in physio and I'm in yoga. I do them twice a week. So once you keep yourself active and keep yourself going, because otherwise it seize up.
I'm sure you half know? The battle as well, Rita, is staying positive.
You have to be positive. Without a doubt, you have to be positive.
Absolutely. Yeah. Leslie, just to bring you back in then and hearing Rita's story, and I know there are so many other people impacted by MS and they're speaking out today and they're great advocates as well. Is there any cure, I suppose, for this, or is it a case of managing it day by day?
No, currently, Owen, there's no cure for MS. It basically is about managing it day by day. And I suppose disease-modifying therapies come into that. Like, we would really encourage people to keep active, eat healthy, you know, and just listen to their bodies, you know what I mean? I suppose linking in with their neurologist, their MS nurse, OT and physiotherapist is key. And just to keep moving, because I kind of think, like, if you're aware of what's available to you and you make use of those resources, that's what will keep you going.
And Rita, would you be on maybe a lot of medication, or would you have considerable amount of doctor's appointments every year?
No, I am. I'm on a lot of medication now. I wouldn't be at the doctor's, only a yearly checkup with my neurologist, but I am on medication and I keep asking them, take me off the injections. I'm fed up with, you know, everything is the same. It hasn't changed. And they said, no, Rita, you wouldn't be as good as you are if you weren't on that medication.
Yeah, that's keeping you stable and keeping you going.
Yeah, exactly. So they said, stay with it. Because I know people that are 100 times worse than me and they're on nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, the Kildare branch then. Can you tell me a little bit about the Kildare branch, Rita? Kind of where you're based and what kind of work you would do there?
Oh, well, we look after our members. At the moment, I'm the chairperson of the branch, but we're a very close team. Like, we all work together. And we all work for a benefit of the members. So, like, we have a barbecue coming up now, 25th of July. We do coffee mornings every month in different areas. We pick spots all over Kildare so that we're reaching out to anybody that, you know, because there's loads of people there that doesn't even know we're there. So we know that for a fact, but we're trying to reach out to them. So hopefully maybe somebody listening to this programme will know that we are there. The Kildare branch is there to help. And anything they need, any help with anything, just tell them to get in touch with us. You can get my phone number off Leslie or whatever. Leslie can pass on information. You know, but I mean, we're there to help our members.
Brilliant stuff. And Leslie, just to finish up with you then, and those branches that are located right around the country, obviously here in Kildare, over the border in Wicklow and Carlow and Dublin, all of those fantastic people doing great work. They're essential to spreading the word about the condition, raising awareness, but also raising funds for the organisation MS Ireland, which is kind of what you're doing today as well.
Yeah, it's all about fundraising, and we can only have those resources to offer people with fundraising. Like a lot of resources like around the disease modifying therapies that we offer are all brought to people in their homes or classes run face to face because of this, you know, I suppose, fundraising that we do continuously throughout the year.
Great stuff. Well, today is World MS Day. It's been great talking to you both. Leslie Kennedy.
Can I actually plug something, Owen? We have a coffee morning for World MS Day in the Parish Centre in Leixlip from 11 to 1. And I'd just love to encourage people to come along, have a cup of coffee, a cake, and partake in our raffle. It'd be a bit of fun tomorrow. Just trying to throw it out there to everyone out there.
Absolutely. Listen, thanks a million for that. And if you want to donate as well, you can go on to www.ms-society.ie and you can file into all the relevant links there. That's Leslie Kennedy, Kildare Regional Community Worker with MS Ireland, and also Rita Larkin from Leixlip, who's living with MS. Thanks to you both, and good afternoon to you.